This is Taz.
The mood is about to change.
The Human Podcast Machine.
You're not afraid of a little competition, are you?
Well, what's up, boys and girls? This is he, Taz, the Human Podcast Machine, and thank you for downloading this edition and or subscribing right here on Play.it or iTunes to my show. Want to say, it's tough being the mayor. It's very tough being the mayor. The mayor of Suplex City. But am I really? Am I really the mayor? I mean, I got people treat me like crazy. It's hilarious. It's a lot of fun, this whole Suplex City thing, thanks to Brock Lesnar. Taz, you're the mayor of Suplex City. I don't know. I might be. But I want to discuss suplexing, suplexers, pro wrestlers. I'm going to miss some guys. I'm going to probably forget the name some guys because you know me. I don't sit here with papers in front of me. I just talk off the cuff. It's tough to do, to nail everybody, remember every really good suplexer without having stuff written down. But I want to tell you about, Suplex City. I want to tell you what I think Suplex City is and just thoughts and opinions about it and certain wrestlers that maybe inspired me a little bit. Well, guys that I respected as excellent suplexers, and it's not a ton of them, but I just want to name a few and just discuss it a little bit here, and you guys might enjoy it. It's a fun little gimmick here. So for those that don't know, at WrestleMania, this past WrestleMania, WWE's, master event, well, the business's grand stage master event, WrestleMania, that was in California, Brock Lesnar was wrestling Roman Reigns and hit him with a bunch of German suplexes. And at one point, the handheld camera picked him up saying, "Suplex City, bitch," something like that. And, well, it clicked. It basically went viral. And I never thought in a million years, because this is what happened. WWE apparently bought a trademark to the word Suplex City. I never thought in a million years WWE or any company would trademark something with the word suplex in it, right? Especially WWE, because it was, when I went to WWE, I my first match is well documented at Madison Square Garden against Kurt Angle, a guy we'll get into in a second. I did my normal routine that I did back then of throws, of suplexes, and front head and arm suplex, T-bone suplex, overhead belly to belly, off the ropes, the whole deal. And, people know I had to curb the way I was doing suplexes after that match a little bit, which was cool, no problem. But now it's embraced now, which I think is great. I'm not bitter. I want to say that first. I think it's great that it's embraced. I think it shows the evolution of the business, WWE's evolution into how to think what wrestlers do physically in the ring, and that suplexing can be done the right way without injuring someone and making it look very exciting, explosive, and awesome. I think a guy like Brock Lesnar, I'm talking about current wrestlers right now that I can think of the top of my head, a guy like Brock Lesnar does that greatly. I mean, Brock mainly hits German suplexes. I mean, for the most part. He's just throwing Germans. He's just doing a bunch of them, which is exhausting, okay, for the guy taking the bump. But to be honest, a lot on Brock, too. You're burning a lot of calories, and your adrenaline's flowing, and you're getting your heart rate cranking by doing all those German suplexes. I'm telling you from experience. But Brock is now, a suplex a suplex king, basically. He's hitting all these Germans. Said the Suplex City bitch thing, and it clicked. WWE owns a trademark on it, which I think is genius. So obviously there's going to be some merchandise or something coming out for it, which I think is great. But there have been many other suplexers before him that were ahead of him. And Brock would tell you that first and foremost. So, I humbly say myself, I try to do all different variations of suplexes, okay? And we'll get into my thing in a minute here. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Got to pay some bills. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right here with this Suplex City edition of the Human Podcast Machine with me, Taz.
All right, look, we'll take a quick break. I'll be right back. I got to smack a few people around over here on the 44th floor of CBS. So I'll be right back.
Well, the wait is finally over. Baseball season is here at last, and the excitement continues all season long at DraftKings.com, the official daily fantasy partner of Major League Baseball. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments, just instant cash, instant gratification. Why wait till the end of the season to claim your victory when you can win huge cash every day? At DraftKings, it's like a brand new season every time you play. Just select two pitchers, eight position players, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to an enormous payday. Last year, check this out. Last year, Peter from Colorado, he won $1 million at DraftKings, yo, in one day. Just by playing fantasy baseball. Hundreds of thousands of fantasy sports fans just like you have already cashed in at DraftKings. Now it's your turn. Hurry to DraftKings.com right now and enter promo code Taz, that's T-A-Z, to play for free. You could win part of $300 million in prizes being awarded this season. Use promo code Taz for free entry now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com, that's DraftKings.com.
Gotta tell you, there's nothing worse than sleeping on a piece of crap junk mattress. Well, I'm gonna help you out with that. Oh, not just me, but my friends over at Casper. Casper Mattress, they're gonna help you out with that. A mattress that's made in America, man. Obsessively engineered mattress with shockingly fair prices. And just the right sink when you lay in this thing. Just the right bounce when you bounce on it. Two technologies, they collide, man, to make this great mattress. Latex foam and memory foam, they come together for better nights and brighter days. Oh, yeah. You can't go wrong with Casper. Risk-free trial, boys and girls, and a return policy. Try sleeping on Casper, check this out, for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. But you know, that stuff could get annoying with something like a mattress. $500 for a twin-size mattress or $950 for a king-size mattress. Compared to that industry averages, that's just an outstanding price point. So check out this special offer to you guys, listeners and supporters of me, Taz, and the Human Podcast Machine. You get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/TAZ. That's Casper.com/Taz, and you're going to get $50 towards any mattress. That is off the chart. Make sure you check out my boys at Casper. Get sleeping the right way. That's Casper.com/TAZ. Okay, guys. Okay. Welcome back. Welcome back. There were guys that inspired me. I mean, the Iron Sheik was a guy who inspired me. Iron Sheik was a generation before me. The great Iron Sheik. And he was innovative. The way he hit his gut wrench and belly-to-belly suplex and belly-to-back suplex. I just think that for that era, the Iron Sheik was just ahead of his time. And it clicked in my brain watching him. I was like, wow, I could do stuff like this, change it a little bit, make it more modern, but let me get my sea legs under me as I started to really learn how to become a wrestler. You know, if you just learn how to lock up and take bumps in the ring, you shouldn't be thinking of different suplexes or high spots off the ropes or crazy stuff. Crawl, then walk, then run, then sprint, okay? So suplexing at a high level is a sprint. Learn how to work first. So the Iron Sheik was a big influence on me. And I also would watch a lot of stuff the Steiner brothers did. I thought Scott and Rick Steiner were doing some different type of throws and utilizing their strength and power in those throws. And did a great job at it. I thought they were pretty innovative, to be honest. I think they were inspired a little bit by some of the wrestlers in Japan, as was I. There was a guy, Hiroshi Hase, who I was a big fan of his. Great suplexer. I mean, did a lot of different type stuff like that, Kalatai suplexes and Northern Lights and all, and I just was a fan and of his work. Speaking of Japan, an American wrestler who was another awesome suplexer, a big, rugged, nasty dude who had all of his success, and he's no longer with us, unfortunately, was Gary Albright. Had all of his success basically in Japan. But Gary Albright, I believe, wrestled for University of Nebraska. And I'm assuming he was an All-American of sorts. Definitely was a heavyweight, big dude. But Gary Albright was a guy who went to Japan and was really exemplified strong style and did some heavy-duty suplexing, you know, and did a great job of it. So that was, to me, a guy like Gary Albright was a guy. I was like, all right, he could do it big and hitting these throws and get over doing it. So I would watch some of these guys, and then also my, you know, martial arts background and my wrestling background, I would train and practice while I was already a pro wrestler, probably, I don't know, trained and certified, for lack of better terms, maybe two, three years. And then I spoke to my cousin Joe Chetty, and who was a wrestling coach at a high school on Long Island, varsity head coach. And he had full access to the wrestling room. And they had crash mats in there. And I said, Joe, I'm going to come in, man, if you don't mind, and work on some throws. I want to practice some suplexes on a crash mat. And I'm kind of exposing the secrets here of the human suplex machine, right? So he and I, he would work with me, and we'd come up with different ways. And my goal was always, how can I hit this throw, make it look insanely explosive and dangerous, but yet protect my opponent? So for those that think I was not protecting my opponent, they're nuts. That was my goal from Jump Street, protecting my opponent. The only time I didn't protect my opponent was when I didn't want to. And I had a reason at times when I didn't want to protect my opponent. It didn't happen often, but at times it did happen. But I didn't start that fight. Let's just put that way. So, and I digress. Might be a good moment to digress right there. So I would train in this high school after wrestling practice with Joe and maybe one or two of the heavyweight seniors and just practice different stuff. Practice different throws on a crash mat so no one got busted up or hurt. And that's really, through months and months, where I perfected and came up with all different unique variations of suplexing. I truly would think of just any way to do it where it wasn't ridiculously looking stupid, but something that was very unique, and I kind of inspired by other guys' stuff and then make it my own. Like T-bone suplex, right? I saw Scott Steiner do a T-bone suplex. I'm sure there was someone who did it before him, but I remember him, for my eyeballs, he was the first guy I saw do it when he was with him and his brother, with the Steiner brothers. And I was inspired by that, but I felt like, and this is not a knock on Scott, I like Scott, that I felt like I could take that suplex, change it a little bit to my style, add a little bit more of a back arch because I wasn't as big as Scott. I was a lot shorter and not as thick and strong, so I wanted to add more technique to the throw. Where his throw looked bigger, but mine would, I wanted to make it look more technically sound type of throw. So that was my goal, like with that. And I named it the T-bone suplex. So I'm going to toot my own horn here, toot toot, because I don't think anybody else called it a T-bone suplex. Now, you watch any wrestling program, you're not going to hear me get the credit for that, ever. I don't know why, but no one realized, like, I was the first guy to take that T-bone, name it the T-bone, and kind of take the style of the back arch in the throw and make it to way some guys do it now in Japan, or maybe Ring of Honor guys, or even some girls. Like, I know Becky Lynch from WWE, from NXT. This is a female who just rocks it with suplexing. You know, I'm a fan of this girl. I mean, she really is technically sound in her throw because she has great back arch. Okay, and that was my goal, was to perfect my back arch. Because you popping your hips, getting that back arch, getting good neck strength, folks, I can't tell you how much I trained for years to build my neck strength, my lower back, my spine, to get my flexibility, training that I did to keep flexibility in my spine, to perfect my back arch, because to me, that was the art and the true technique of the suplex. You need gasoline for your car, for your engine to run. You need a back arch and lower back and neck strength for your suplex to be perfect. So that was my whole motive. My whole thing was, you know, back arch, neck strength, quick hips, great grip, and, you know, try to protect the guy the right way. And that's where I practiced it and trained and trained and trained. So, you know, I feel like, hey, Suplex City was always a very profitable place for me to live throughout my ECW years, you know, and I take a lot of pride in witnessing good suplexing, you know, perfection on suplexing. Dean Malenko was another guy who could utilize some really good suplexing when he wanted to. Dean, I thought, was under respected with his suplexing ability. Again, being a shorter guy like myself, his hips were below his opponent. And you guys who are fans of my commentary, when you heard me throughout the years as a commentator, either with WWE or with TNA or whatever, you would hear me talk about the technique in my commentary of a proper suplex. Getting your hips under your opponent is the key to popping your hips. Now, I'm giving you instructions how to do this, okay? That doesn't mean any Tom, Dick, or Harry, any wrestler can do it. You know, it takes perfection. You have to have an amateur background, I believe. You have to have the work ethic to put the time in to really train at this. And you have to have a vision. And I had a vision. I knew I was going to be the human suplex machine. I never came up with the name. That wasn't what I'm saying. I knew that suplexing was going to be a huge part of my arsenal before the name human suplex machine even came into the play. That happened when I was training under Johnny Rods in Brooklyn, and I was already trained, and I was one of his senior students. A couple of years went by, and I was still in the dojo helping guys come in, new guys, teach them how to lock up, take bumps, like fundamental stuff, and then, you know, like most senior wrestlers in the school do, and hand them over then to the senior instructor, Johnny Rods, in that case. And I was wrestling for smaller independent companies that Johnny Rods was the booker of. And I was hitting suplexes on a lot of these tours. I was trying different stuff. And good God, he got so mad. I would try them in the dojo, too. I'd try them at his school on different... And all the wrestlers were like, yeah, let's try this. Yeah, oh, I want a sick bump. Oh, that hurt, but it was okay. You know, I would practice these throws. And Johnny saw me, and he's old school. And good God, he just cut a promo on me. You can't do that. You're never going to make your money doing that. No one's going to work with you. That's dangerous. And I'm not knocking Johnny. That was old school. That's how he thought. That's how he thought. That's why I said at the top of this podcast, I mean, it's so nice to see the evolution of business that something like Suplex City would get over so much. Or the number one company in the world, the biggest, largest wrestling company in the world, the WWE, you're seeing so many different guys and gals hit suplexes. Hard and tight, high and hard hitting suplexes. You know, back in the day, that wasn't the way it was going to be. You get heat, and I got heat. So Johnny Rods, what he was telling me when I was coming up, was the truth. Because he was right. But I was thick-headed. I was like, well, then I broke away from him and his shows, and I started doing these suplexes. And yeah, I wasn't getting as booked as much as I should have been, I thought then. But I was getting booked a little bit here, and some guys were maybe a little gun-shy to wrestle me, because I did use a lot of these different maneuvers, these suplexes. I would pride myself on not just hitting, like, one suplex throughout the whole match. That wasn't my thing. You know, I wanted to have a potpourri of throws, and I would always try to change them. I'd write these things down. I'd have lists. All right, this match I did these four throws. All right, this match I did these two. I would always try to limit it to like three suplexes on an average in a good 10, 15-minute match. I didn't want to do more than that. I didn't want to prostitute it. I wanted to keep it special. Paul Heyman with ECW TV and all the wrestlers I got an opportunity to wrestle helped get that thing over, that human suplex machine. Guys that I've had, guys like Rob Van Dam or Sabu or Tommy Dreamer or Mikey Ripwreck, who have taken these six suplex bumps for me over the years. You know, I thank those guys, you know, because they helped build it. And Heyman with the TV and the way he would edit it. And Joey Styles, good God, the way Joey would get him over. That really was all encompassed the human suplex machine. That helped me, you know, and I'm thankful for those men and for those opportunities, you know. And so to me, when I just see someone throw a suplex and they want to call themselves a quote-unquote suplex machine, no. okay? There was a lot that went into what I did. It wasn't just like, hey, this guy's shorter, squatty guy, he's explosive, and he can hit a suplex. No. No. There was a lot of years that went into this. A lot. Now, Suplex City, who's the mayor? I don't know. I don't know who the mayor is. There's got to be a mayor. There's got to be a sheriff. There's got to be a deputy. So, I don't know. Maybe this is a podcast. I might have to get Mike today involved with this or something. I got to figure this out. But but no, really, I think Kurt Angle. I mentioned Kurt. I almost forgot to mention him again here. I think Kurt is another guy who is a tremendous suplexer. Obviously, being an Olympic gold medalist and all his years of wrestling freestyle and Greco, all his training, his neck strength, his back arching ability, his quick hips, his great grip, all that plays into it. Shelton Benjamin was another guy who was a tremendous suplexer. Another great wrestler. Was a teammate with Brock Lesnar at University of Minnesota. You know, so I think that I tried to hit all different variations of throws. That was my goal. And I would very rarely do them in the early in a match, or if I wasn't in a feud with a guy, I wouldn't really do it a ton of them, because I didn't want to, like, quote unquote, waste them. I felt like you had to cherish the throw. You got to do it at the right time. You see a lot of younger wrestlers today just grab the guy and throw the guy. Okay, well, that don't mean anything. It's like moonsaulting. So many guys had done moonsaults. Sabu, I felt, was just so innovative and doing it through the table, and he would pick his spot when to do it. You know, and after he did it, how he sold it himself, he was a genius. He was a master performer. You know, and most of these younger wrestlers, they all can do moonsaults. Yeah, bigger guys and little guys. But you watch a guy like him, how he perfected the creative behind a moonsault or any kind of high flipping diving move, what he would do after the move or not do after the move. The guy was a genius. And, you know, I think you got to be strategic with certain things. And that's what I pride myself on when all my years of doing suplexing. So that's the deal, man. Suplex City. I wanted to just break that down for you. I'm very happy for Brock Lesnar. I think that if anybody's going to be deemed the Suplex City guy, it should be Brock. I mean, he's the one who said it. And a fan tweet me, say, you actually said Suplex City, meaning me, during commentary. I think it was during a SmackDown. It might have been during a Brock Lesnar match. I think what that fan tweeted, but I'm not looking at the tweet, that I said Suplex City. And that's something I would say. You know what I mean? So I probably did say that years ago. I'm not saying Brock took it from me, but it's kind of ironic. You know, it's kind of weird. I guess I'm a visionary. You know, in my own mind, I am. I don't think anybody else believes it, but to me, I am. So that's really the deal. So that was it. Suplex City. So who's the mayor? I don't know. I mean, I don't know who the mayor is. The sheriff role is not bad. There's less pressure on you. Mayor is more pressure. But right now, Brock Lesnar, he's kind of the king on the block in Suplex City. It's going to be tough to dethrone the big man. So that's it. Suplex City Breakdown. Gave you a little HPM insight on suplexing. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And stay tuned right here for some more programming on Play.it or iTunes from He, the Human Podcast Machine, formerly or always the Human Suplex Machine. My name is Taz. Yours is not. Thank you and see you.